Testimony 6, Chapter 1, Slackness Reproved.
Further explanation from the appendix on this matter of slackness reproved and organization says, up to the year 1860, there had been no legal or church organization among the Sabbath-keeping Adventists. They had not even adopted a name. They spoke of themselves as the scattered flock, the little remnant, or some variation of such expressions. Now Elder White had announced through the review that he must refuse to continue to assume personal responsibility for money lent to the Review and Herald office. He further expressed the hope that the time might soon come when this people will be in that position necessary to be able to get church property insured, hold their meeting houses in a proper manner, that those persons making their wills and wishing to do so can appropriate a portion to the publishing department. He called upon his brethren to make suggestions as to how this desire might be effected so that we as a people might act to secure the above advantages. Among the first responses to this request was one from the Brother B referred to in this connection, in which he expressed his conviction that it would be wrong to incorporate as a religious body according to law. This, he held, would be making us a name, as was the purpose of the builders of the Tower of Babel, and would lie at the foundation of Babylon. As for insuring the meeting houses, were they not the Lord's property? And could he not take care of his own without the aid of insurance companies? Further, said he, those who lend money to the office should not insist on having a note signed by a legal corporation, for they lend it to the Lord, and they must trust the Lord for it. This all was quoted from the Review and Herald, February 23 and March 22, 1860. The appendix continues. After much discussion, the misgivings regarding the propriety of legally organizing the publishing office were largely overcome, and at a conference held in September 1860, the Advent Review Publishing Association was formed. A few months later, the name was changed to the Seventh-day Adventist Publishing Association. Even after this step, there still remained with some a reluctance to enter into church organization, and the subject continued to be discussed. However, with a large majority favoring organization, the movement proceeded, first by the organization of churches, then of state conferences, and finally in 1863 of the General Conference. The testimony on organization, coming up just a little later, speaks of the opposition that was encountered in New York State to this move and of the vision regarding it. Now, back to our main text. Dear brethren and sisters, the Lord has again visited me in mercy in a time of bereavement and great affliction. December 23, 1860, I was taken off in vision and was shown the wrongs of individuals which have affected the cause. I dare not withhold the testimony from the church to spare the feelings of individuals. I was shown the low state of God's people, that God had not departed from them, but that they had departed from Him and had become lukewarm. They possess the theory of the truth, but lack its saving power. As we near the close of time, Satan comes down with great power, knowing that his time is short. Especially will his power be exercised upon the remnant. He will war against them and seek to divide and scatter them, that they may grow weak and be overthrown. The people of God should move understandingly and should be united in their efforts. They should be of the same mind, of the same judgment. Then their efforts will not be scattered, but will tell forcibly in the upbuilding of the cause of present truth. Order must be observed, and there must be union in maintaining order, or Satan will take the advantage. I saw that the enemy would come in every way possible to dishearten the people of God, and perplex and trouble them, and that they should move understandingly and prepare themselves for the attacks of Satan. matters pertaining to the church should not be left in an unsettled condition. Steps should be taken to secure church property for the cause of God, that the work may not be retarded in its progress, and that the means which persons wish to dedicate to God's cause may not slip into the enemy's ranks. I saw that God's people should act wisely and leave nothing undone on their part to place the business of the church in a secure state. Then, after all is done that they can do, they should trust the Lord to overrule these things for them, that Satan take no advantage of God's remnant people. It is Satan's time to work. A stormy future is before us, and the church should be awake to make an advance move, that they may stand securely against his plans. It is time that something was done. God is not pleased to have his people leave the matters of the church at loose ends and suffer the enemy to have the whole advantage and control affairs as best pleases him. I was shown the wrong stand taken by Brother B. in the review in regard to organization and the distracting influence he exerted. He did not sufficiently weigh the matter. His articles were perfectly calculated to have a scattering influence, to lead minds to wrong conclusions, and to encourage many in their slack ideas of managing matters relating to the cause of God. Those who do not feel the weight of this cause upon them do not feel the necessity of anything being done to establish church order. Those who have long borne the burden look to the future and weigh matters. They are convinced that steps must be taken to place the matters of the church in a more secure position, where Satan cannot come in and take advantage. Brother B.'s articles caused those who fear order to look with suspicion upon the suggestions of those who, by the special providence of God, move out in the important matters of the church. And when he saw that his position would not bear, he failed to frankly acknowledge his error and labor to efface the wrong impression he had made. I saw that in temporal matters, Brother B. was too easy and negligent. He has lacked energy, considering it a virtue, to leave to the Lord that which the Lord has left to him. It is only in cases of great emergency that the Lord interposes for us. We have a work to do, burdens and responsibilities to bear, and in thus doing, we obtain an experience. Brother B. manifests the same character in spiritual matters as in his temporal affairs. There is a lack of zeal and earnestness to make thorough work. All should act with more discretion and wisdom in regard to the things of God than they manifest in temporal things to secure an earthly possession. But while God's people are justified in securing church property in a lawful manner, they should be careful to maintain their peculiar and holy character. I saw that unconsecrated persons would take advantage of the position which the church has recently taken and would overstep the bounds, carry matters to extremes, and wound the cause of God. Some will move without wisdom or judgment, engage in lawsuits that might be avoided, mingle with the world, partake of its spirit, and influence others to follow their example. One professed Christian who moves unadvisedly does much harm to the cause of present truth. Evil takes root much more readily than good, and flourishes when good and right languish unless carefully nourished. I was pointed back and saw that in every important move, every decision made or point gained by God's people, some have arisen to carry matters to extremes and to move in an extravagant manner, which has disgusted unbelievers, distressed God's people, and brought the cause of God into disrepute. The people whom God is leading out in these last days will be troubled with just such things, but much evil will be avoided if the ministers of Christ will be of one mind, united in their plans of action, and united in effort. If they will stand together, sustain one another, and faithfully rebuke and reprove wrong, they will soon cause it to wither. But Satan has controlled these matters very much. Private members and even preachers have sympathized with disaffected ones who have been reproved for their wrongs and division of feeling has been the result. The one who has ventured out and discharged his disagreeable duty by faithfully meeting error and wrong is grieved and wounded that he receives not the fullest sympathy of his preaching brethren. He becomes discouraged in discharging this painful duties, lays down the cross, and withholds the pointed testimony. His soul is shut up in darkness, and the church suffer for the lack of the very testimony which God designed should live among his people. Satan's object is gained when the faithful testimony is suppressed. Those who so readily sympathize with the wrong consider it a virtue, but they realize not that they are exerting a scattering influence and that they themselves help to carry out Satan's plans. I saw that many souls have been destroyed by their brethren unwisely sympathizing with them, when their only hope was to be left to see and realize the full extent of their wrongs. But as they eagerly accept the sympathy of unwise brethren, they receive the idea that they are abused, and if they attempt to retrace their steps, they make half-hearted work. They divide the matter to suit their natural feelings, lay blame upon the reprover, and so patch up the matter. It is not probed to the bottom. It is not healed. And they again fall into the same wrong because they were not left to feel the extent of their wrong and humble themselves before God and let Him build them up. False sympathizers have worked in direct opposition to the mind of Christ and ministering angels. Ministers of Christ should arise and engage in the work of God with all their energies. God's servants are not excused if they shun pointed testimony. They should reprove and rebuke wrong and not suffer sin upon a brother. I must here introduce a portion of a letter addressed to Brother C. Quote, "I was shown some things in regard to you. I saw that the living pointed testimony had been crushed in the church. You have not been in harmony with the straight testimony. You have shunned to lay your hand decidedly upon wrong, and you have been tried with those who felt compelled to do so. Disaffected ones have had your sympathy. This has had a tendency to make you a weak man. You have not been in union with pointed, cutting testimony which has been sent home to the individual. God's servants are not excused if they shun pointed testimony. They must reprove and rebuke wrong and not suffer sin upon a brother. You have often stretched out your hands to shield persons from the censure which they deserved and the correction which the Lord designed they should have. If these persons fail to reform, their lack is set to your account. Instead of watching for their danger and warning them of it, you have cast your influence against those who have followed the convictions of duty and reproved and warned the erring. These are perilous times for the Church of God, and the greatest danger now is that of self-deception. Individuals professing to believe the truth are blind to their own danger and wrongs. They reach the standard of piety which has been set up by their friends and themselves. They are fellowshipped by their brethren and are satisfied, while they entirely fail to reach the gospel standard set up by our divine Lord. If they regard iniquity in their hearts, the Lord will not hear them. But with many, it is not only regarded in the heart, but openly carried out in the life. Yet in many cases, the wrongdoers receive no rebuke. I was pointed back to blank. Your feelings were wrong there. You should have stood side by side with Elder D and made straight work, taken hold of and reproved individual wrongs. The burden you cast upon Elder D, you deserved yourself, for your lack of moral courage to lay your hand upon wrong. You influenced others. The good work which God designed should be accomplished for certain ones was not accomplished, and they have been puffed up by Satan. If you had stood in the counsel of God at that time, an influence would have been cast which would have told upon the cause of God. The Spirit of the Lord was grieved, and this lack of union discourages those upon whom God lays the burden of reproof. I was shown that you had been wrong in sympathizing with E. The course you have taken in regard to him has injured your influence and has greatly injured the cause of God. It is impossible for E to be fellowshipped by the Church of God. He has placed himself where he cannot be helped by the Church, where he can have no communion with nor voice in the Church. He has placed himself there in the face of light and truth. He has stubbornly chosen his own course and refused to listen to reproof. He has followed the inclinations of his corrupt heart, has violated the holy law of God, and has disgraced the cause of present truth. If he repents ever so heartily, the Church must let his case alone. If he goes to heaven, it must be alone, without the fellowship of the Church. A standing rebuke from God and the Church must ever rest upon him, that the standard of morality be not lowered to the very dust. The Lord is displeased with your course in these things. You have injured the cause of God. Your willful course has wounded the hearts of God's people. Your influence encourages a slack state of things in the Church. You should bear a living, pointed testimony. Stand out of the way of the work of God. Step not in between God and his people. You have too long wrapped up the sharp testimony and stood opposed to the severe censure which God lays upon individual wrongs. God is correcting and proving and purifying his people. Stand out of the way that his work be not hindered. He will not accept a smooth testimony. Ministers must cry aloud and spare not. The Lord has given you a powerful testimony calculated to strengthen the Church and arouse unbelievers. But these things wherein you lack must be corrected, or your testimony will become powerless and your influence injure to the cause of God. The people look to you for an example. Do not mislead them. Let your influence be to correct wrongs in your family and in the Church. Unquote. I have been shown that the Lord is reviving the living, pointed testimony which will develop character and purify the Church. But while we are commanded to separate from the world, it is not necessary that we become coarse and rough and descend to common expressions and make our remarks as rude as possible. The truth is designed to elevate the receiver, to refine his taste and sanctify his judgment. There should be a continual effort to imitate the society we expect soon to join, namely, angels of God who have never fallen by sin. The character should be holy, the manners comely, the words without guile, and thus should we follow on step by step until we are fitted for translation.